Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. Every company has a story to tell, from the small startup to the large enterprise, and everything in between. This is one of them. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Here we are, Marco.
Here we are. Are you going to tell me your story today?
We're going to continue a story.
Not yours.
Not mine. Mine is boring. Mine is boring. We have better, way better stories to tell. And this is a chapter two in the saga that we're bringing to light here on ITSB Magazine. And it's with an organization that's doing some pretty cool things for systems that many might not think about all the time. They kind of sit in this middle zone of running businesses, and with that comes exposure and risk that many companies probably don't recognize they have.
And the funny thing about it, Sean, is that they've actually been around way longer than other systems. So to forget about them and not understanding the important role that they have, because for a certain kind of industry, You need this. And this, let's not hide it anymore. Let's talk about the company that we're talking about today.
Yeah, exactly. So this is with Key Resources, and I'm thrilled to say that we have Ray Overby with us. Ray is the CTO and co-founder of Key Resources, along with Cynthia Overby, who we had our introduction to the company in chapter one. Ray, thanks so much for joining.
Glad to be here. I'd like to talk a little bit about my background, just quickly.
Absolutely.
Of course.
I'm a toolmaker by trade, and I went to college. I have a computer science degree. And when I got out of college, I worked for a firm called Spiegels, and I was in their audit department, and I wrote COBOL programs when I was good, which wasn't very often, but stayed there for probably, I don't know, 6-8 months. And then the following year, I got a job at a company, software development company called SKK. They're the original authors of ACF2, one of the major security packages in the mainframe environment. And so that started my mainframe security career. And I got a lot of good training and development experience in that environment. And in 1981 when I started there. And in 88, we started Key Resources. And the company has evolved over the years, but we do a lot of different things, but always security related. And compliance, vulnerability analysis, writing code, trying to be a good resource for people, right? As the industry ages, right, we're losing a lot of knowledge out of our industry. And as Marco indicated, you know, you can't not use a mainframe in today's environment if you use an ATM, right? It's going to go through the mainframe environment, and that's part of everybody's life today, right? So it's important that everybody understands what role it plays and, you know, the data that's kept on it and what it does, as well as the security concerns and things that, you know, are evolving like everything else, right? Security is high on the minds of all the businesses, and you don't want to end up in the news or your data on the dark web. So it's pretty important.
It is, and I can't help but get nostalgic we're talking mainframes, because some of my early days in tech were working with AS400s and OS400s and JD Edwards and all this stuff, and we were trying to connect the PC world to the mainframe world and do all kinds of crazy things, and that's where I cut my teeth in tech and in security as well. And so it's interesting to see how the environment has evolved, and I think they remain a critical part. And this is one of the things we touched on with Cynthia, all the places they live in many, many industry sectors, and some of them critical infrastructure, like the banking one you described. And because they've been around for so long and they're kind of off in their own little closet, if you will, they kind of lose exposure. They lose the out of, or they become out of sight, out of mind to some degree, and they just kind of work, right? But that doesn't mean they don't have the same challenges with respect to needing updates and being maintained and configured properly and connected properly and access control and all the stuff that goes with normal networks and systems. So we touched a lot of that with Cynthia in terms of what they do and how they're working in the network. Today, I think, Ray, we want to talk about just kind of the skill sets required and the human element required to keep these going. And you touched on it earlier in your introduction, that there aren't necessarily enough people, right? Yeah. So my first question to you on this topic is just, there we cry in the industry that there aren't enough people to handle the security team requirements we have. Does the mainframe add to that broader tech-wise, and does it make it even harder from a cybersecurity perspective to find talent to not just run them, but to secure these systems?
Well, just a little background on myself. I went to one of the few colleges back in the day that actually had a mainframe curriculum. I don't believe that college still has that, and there's very limited places that students can go and get mainframe access. So when I came out of college, I knew how to read IBM manuals. I knew how to use IBM utilities. I could code JCL. I knew how to, at that point, get onto a TSO-like session and basically be productive, where most people coming into the mainframe arena basically would have to go through a boot camp just to get to that level. And I was able to come in and be productive almost from day one. So having mainframe-specific education, I think, is a critical factor that's lacking in a lot of ways in our current environment. Marist College, I think, out on the East Coast is a leading university today for the mainframe, but there's really not a lot of other, universities that teach the mainframe. So that's part of the people problem, because we're not bringing in new people. Of course, businesses are driving to some extent their own training classes or outsourcing to get training in, because they still have to get the job done and they still have mainframes. And I would say in general, if you could get off the mainframe, most of them have done it. But the ones that keep the mainframe, not only are they keeping it, they're getting more, right? So from a footprint standpoint, I think that the number of mainframe systems is actually growing rather than receding. So this fact that people talk about legacy systems and it's going away, it's like, it's true that there's fewer companies that have mainframes, but it's not true that there's fewer mainframes. In fact, I believe there's more mainframes. So this problem for the people that have mainframes, they either have to solve it themselves or partner with educational institutions to try to do a better job, or at least to cover, things that they could, do with that. And I don't have the answer, but I just know from my experience, I didn't have to go through a boot camp, and companies like people like me because they were, they didn't have to train them, right? I could come out of the box and then I could look at JCLs, get onto the systems, I could key punch because I started a long time ago, right? So I was basically usable, right? I had skills, right? People would use them.
So I guess we can do a little bit of a walk on the timeline in the past to kind of get to where we are now. So you're telling you were prepared for that kind of frames and computer systems, because at the time we didn't have that much variety that we have nowadays.
Yes.
So it would be interesting to see how you can summarize maybe the main difference that you see from the way that companies and individual professional can support a mainframe versus supporting, the clouds or other type of system that we're running now today.
Right. If I put on my, I'll just call it system admin hat, but in the mainframe that would be like the systems programmer, right?
Yes.
Responsible for maintaining and patching the systems and new releases and all that kind of thing. Or if I'm a security professional trying to secure that system, I think the biggest difference today is that, you know, back when I first started, the mainframe didn't have access to anything but the mainframe. Everything it needed was in that environment. And access was restricted. It's like a castle with a moat and all the windows are locked. And really, you know, they didn't worry about security that much. But in today's environment, I not only do I have to have mainframe skills, but I can't access the system without going through Windows or Linux and, you know, PC applications to get in there. And sometimes, you know, parts of the, for instance, the, you know, ATM process may run outside of the mainframe, although parts of it do run on the mainframe, right? So it's an integrated environment where everything touches everything, right? So you can't just have mainframe experience. You have to have TCP/IP experience in mid-ranges and Linux and PC routines just to navigate doing basic things, right? So, you know, I have to use my phone. I may be accessing the mainframe through my phone because you can do TN3270 through your phone or your laptop or, you know, whatever, right? And IPLing systems, all that kind of stuff, right? It's all integrated. I get my maintenance these days through FTP, right? I don't get tapes anymore like we did way back when, right? So, yeah, it's all changing. It's very inclusive. And honestly, when I'm, and this is more for the security admins, I preach to the admins that you have to assume the, quote, bad people are inside your network, right? They may not necessarily today have access to your mainframe, but maybe they got access to a print server. And now they're looking around in the inside of your network, right? And the hackers call that island hopping, right? Where they get into the network, they start tracing stuff. And if you're not doing encryption, you know, they get mainframe credentials and they can, you know, access the mainframe just like they can access any other node in the network, right? And so, yeah, everything's connected. And the mindset now is you have to assume that they're inside your perimeter and that, you know, firewalls and the rest of it isn't going to keep them out, right? And if you're not proactive, you know, if you wait until the phone call to say you got a problem, it's like you've lost, right? Because that's the people calling you saying your data's on the dark web for sale. What do you want to pay for it, right? So proactive, assume they're inside your defenses and basically approach your day-to-day activities with that in mind. It's not if, it's when you're going to have to deal with this.
And we are to visibility again, Sean.
Visibility for sure. Well, I think what's interesting here, and before we go down the deep, dark, dirty, and then hopefully come back to there is hope, I want to talk about the possible and perhaps your view of the comeback of the mainframe, where you said they're not declining, they're growing in importance in different organizations. So, it's because of the... Well, I'm going to assume some things, or I'll just ask you, why is that? Is it because of their power, or what is it that makes them so appealing for the organizations that take them on?
Well, I think that, you know, from a hardware standpoint, the hardware is fairly expensive, but it's extremely reliable, right? You know, redundancy is built in, you know, you can't buy a cheap version of it. It's meant to house literally hundreds, if not thousands, of applications in one environment and allow thousands, tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands of people to all access those applications in one place, right? So the economy of scale is there such that instead of having, you know, 100 servers that you need, you know, X number of people to support that, you can have just a couple of system admins that can take care of one system of that size, right? So not only, you know, there's economies of scale that I think from a business standpoint just makes it smarter, better business to, you know, look at the mainframe as a way to house your applications, or at least most of them or a lot of them, right, with large data requirements and lots of access and, of course, the security. Yeah. The mainframe environment is considered very, very secure. And architecturally, you can limit what the end user can do, right? And when the end user is able to bypass those controls right? That's always taken as a problem and fixed, right? I mean, and that's, you know, the IBM statement of integrity, right? Which you don't really see on the other platforms, right? Which is really the basis for any kind of security, right? If the end user architecturally has the ability to bypass the controls that have put in place, whether by the security people or by the architecture, right? You know, you can't really have security, right? So the mainframe is an inherently secure place, but everybody has to do a certain due diligence, right? Everybody has to play by the same rules. If they don't, as Marco said earlier, they're just as vulnerable as any other platform.
Right? Yeah. And as a follow-up to this, because you mentioned everything all in one, and I think a challenge we face with security these days is just the complexity of networks and systems and applications and services and APIs, and I can keep going. And presumably a mainframe kind of keeps all of that contained, perhaps reduces some of the complexity as well. And I suspect you'll counter some of this with, but it also introduces, you have all of that in one place and you have to really get the policies in place right too. So your thoughts on that?
Well, a distributed environment is thought to be much more complicated than a non-distributed environment, right? So if you're communicating instead of, even if it's over a TCP/IP connection within the same physical environment, it's considered more secure and easier to manage than across separate, distinct boxes. And whether that's in the same room or across the country or across the world, right? Having the distributed environment just inherently has more complexity. So the mainframe does provide a single spot to put most of that, most of your environment, or, you know, do it across just a handful of those mainframe systems. So in that respect, it does reduce the responsibility or the complexity. On the other hand, a single exploitable vulnerability on the mainframe will affect lots and lots of applications and users and their data, right? So, you know, there's a trade-off there in how you want to do that, right? And, you know, there's rationales to how you segregate production workflows from, say, development, test, or sandbox, and try to segregate those things in a way that makes sense and allows you to better secure those environments.
So let's go back to the human element. So we talked about the history. We talked about the necessity for the business to use mainframes. So it's not disappearing. It's augmenting in terms of more and more need. There is the lack of professionals in this industry in general. I'm kind of guessing there is a specific lack in this particular role, because you said the mainframe security takes a little bit of knowledge on both sides of things, like for the mainframe and the overall environment, the open environment that you have. So how does the industry respond to this? Like, you get the mainframe and then how do you secure it? I mean, how does your company also come into place if there is a lack of this kind of resources?
Well, one of the things key resources has been talking to people about is this concept of a mainframe security architect. 30 years ago, they had that. But today, most CIOs and the C-level folks in the companies think that the mainframe is secure and they don't really need to do much, right? And they're not really wanting to spend money on it because the mainframe's not sexy, right? You can't, you know, and you can't deposit your check from your phone, or you can't interact with your end user through your phone necessarily, or, you know, whatever. It's not the sexy part of the business. And unfortunately, I think the mainframe as an industry as a whole lost the battle with the, the other environments where, we're considered, the mainframe is considered legacy. It's not really relevant to today. So you're trying to bring people, you know, the facts, right? When, you know, the first thing when people talk about mainframe is it's a legacy, right? Why would anybody want to write in COBOL? Where the fact of the matter is the latest IBM mainframe computers are state of the art and run as fast or faster than almost anything else, as well as the architecture is such with the statement of integrity that they're one of the most securable platforms, as long as everybody plays by the rules, that you can have. And so, but it does require due diligence. So,
and Ray, I'm going to pause you there because play by the rules, are those different in this environment connected to the other environment? Because I'm wondering, how do people know what those rules are, and are there enough people to know the rules, and are there ways that you can help expose and bring that policy to light?
I'm going to talk a little bit about the early days when the first engineer had a program to run in a computer. Single program, no multi-programming, all that stuff, right? They had enough trouble just getting to the point to where it added 2 + 2 and got 4 and had the single program to run. The next problem that they had to solve was, how do I run 2 programs simultaneously using the same resources, the same memory and DASD and all that tape and whatever, right? But not stepping on each other. And that was the next main problem that the engineers had to solve. Well, the way they described that problem was something called integrity, right? So that whatever program that you're doing, the integrity of that wouldn't be affected by the other program, right? So that when you added 2 + 2 in the one program, the other one added 3 + 3, they would always get consistent results. So that integrity issue, how to segregate those out and keep those programs from stepping on each other, was the initial solution, and people called that integrity. Integrity, though, in 1973-ish, probably a little bit earlier, IBM came out with this statement of integrity that basically said, you know, in order to have security, right, you got to have integrity. So the process that were put in place by the computer hardware and software, as well as the people, you know, defining the security, couldn't be bypassed by the end user, right? And so, you know, basically without integrity, you can't have security, right? And that's true in Windows, that's true in Linux, that's true in any computer system. Without integrity, you cannot have security. So if you understand the concept of integrity, you apply it to those computer systems, and really what CISOs need to be, you know, take into considerations, it's like, would you want to put company confidential information on a system where there was no integrity? In other words, that you can't secure it, right? It may be sexy, but if you can't secure it, right, why would you want to do that? But that happens all the time. And I don't know, my experience has been that, as you, Sean, we're talking about the AS400 stuff where you're trying to connect it to everything, right? There's two parts to the business. The people that are thinking about, I want to do new things and do good stuff and sexy things. So that's the connectivity part where you're blazing new ground, right? Well, the people like me have to come in after that, after you've connected stuff and you've got access. It's like, well, how do you manage and secure that environment? And that's always lagging behind, right? So people will do new things and get them in there. So it's just, that's the way it always seems to be. But to me, to get people to understand in a simple way as possible, it's really, it all gets down to integrity. Can the end user bypass the controls in the system? And if the operating system is set up to where they can, well, it's not really a very secure system, is it? Right? So why would you want to put company sensitive data on something that you can't secure? Right? So a security architect, that's part of their job, right? When new applications comes up, it's like, hey, you know, where's the data stored? How is it moved through the network? Are we doing this in such a way that we can manage and secure it, even though we got all this connectivity here and can do that, right? So, and that's something that's fallen out of favor, right? That
I'm wondering, are there enough security architects? And
no.
Where are they getting the information? Of course,
yes.
Aren't.
Yeah, there aren't. And really, the security architect also has to be high enough in the organization where they're in on the ground level when new application development is first brought up, and they can influence how that's done, right? Because it's much more costly after it's ready to be delivered that somebody finally asks the mainframe people, like, hey, what's that going to do to your environment, right? And in the mainframe, we talk about individual accountability, right? As part of that integrity environment. You also have to know who did what to whom from where. Otherwise, how can you secure it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because we just did a podcast that's probably going to go live soon after this, where we were talking about the importance of architecture in security and how we went all the way back to Vitruvius, the architect during the Roman Empire, and how you need to have, you're using different technology, but the concept of having a vision and a plan instead of patching on something that is not structured the right way from the beginning, it's a problem in today's security. So I'm featuring that as one of the main elements that the people in charge of security of the mainframe need to have.
Yeah. And unfortunately, most CISOs really don't realize, because either they don't have any mainframe experience, or you know, the ones that do are aging out of the market, that they just don't really understand the environment, right? IBM does a lot saying, you know, these systems are secure, and really what they should be saying is they are very securable, but there's a certain level of due diligence, right? You have to do patch management. You need to, you know, make sure that they're configured properly and, you know, that nobody can bypass the controls that are put in place.
So let's get into it here, Ray, as we kind of get close to the end. CISOs need, and Marco said the word, visibility into this environment. And hopefully they can do that in connection to the rest of the environment, not look upon the mainframe environment as legacy and off the mark, doesn't matter, but bring it into the fold, right? And bring it back to the business to say, here's all you're able to do because of this environment that's really solid and has integrity, but we do have some exposure that needs to be addressed. It still needs to be patched, as you said. You still need to have it configured properly. Access control is still best practice that needs to be managed. How do you, key resources, help the CISO get that visibility and have those conversations with their peers?
Well, we're certainly educating and showing companies that while the mainframe is securable, that if they don't do their due diligence, they could have vulnerabilities that would allow end users to bypass their controls. We help them meet their compliance requirements and, well, either help formulate them or help check them, right? Because as I said earlier, if you're not proactive, if you're not out looking for instance, out of compliance situations and trying to remediate them before you get the phone call saying there's a problem, right? You can't survive. Your business is going to have a hard time surviving in today's environment, right? So we believe we have good solutions and good expertise that will help clients, you know, raise awareness and better understand what they need to do.
Yeah, I think when you get to this level of complexity, the only solution is to have the experience, to have been dealing with that before, to understand the history, I think, to be able to move in the future. Like, you know, you just went through the history of the mainframe and when you started and how all that you learned there, it still applies today, maybe even more. And so I think that's when you bring in the experts, Sean, and that's what KRI does.
Exactly. And I think what's really interesting to me is, I mean, these are systems, as you put, Ray, they're designed to live and function and provide value for a long, long time. They're not the throwaway Windows box that gets end of life in 5 years and there are no patches for it anymore. These are systems that companies make investments in. They want to get the most out of the investment, but not at the expense of exposure. So I think Marco captured it. Working with a team, working with a partner who understand this environment and its connection to the rest of the business to help make sure that it's doing its part and that they can actually keep it that long term and get the most out of it.
Well said.
Yeah, couldn't have said myself. But with that said,
I don't know where that came from.
With that said, see, you started well today. You ended well.
Look,
I'm very
that.
Proud of you, man. No, this was a great
I'm feeling
story.
Nostalgic, as I said, and it was an absolute pleasure chatting with Ray.
Yeah.
looking back to the future.
Exactly.
So really cool.
Exactly. And this being chapter two of the story, call to action for everybody listening to the podcast, in the notes in the podcast and on the page where this is going to be with the two stories, the first one with Cynthia and this one with Ray. If you haven't listened to the first one, start with that, then do this one, and then there'll be resources to connect directly with with key resources. So we hope you enjoyed it. Ray, it was a real pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and the story made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.